like a knife. But I feel so right. My administration is working every single day to heed and honor the will of the voters. That includes working on one of the biggest tax cuts in American history. And actually, if I get what I want, it will be the single biggest tax cut in American history.
You are listening to the Laura Ingraham Show. That was the president last night in Youngstown, Ohio. And he takes a break from the heat in D.C. to go back to the heartland, where it all really came true. This beginning of the populist dream came true. Populism, economic populism, nationalism, trade that is smart trade, better trade, works for the American people. International trade is fine, great, but he wants to do it better. There's a lot happening that is really, really great on the trade front. And I've been saying this for some months now, but I think perhaps more than on any other issue, Donald Trump connected with the American people. Immigration, for sure. But trade, it was this close second. No doubt about it. Anti-political correctness, absolutely. He was against these foreign wars, absolutely. But the trade issue had been just sold down the river by Republicans for years. And Democrats, shamefully, went in lockstep with big business as well, as we saw with Hillary Clinton and even Barack Obama, for the most part, with a few exceptions of things they did on steel. But for the most part, the establishment just went right down the road with WTO and China and never renegotiate NAFTA, never look at CAFTA, never look at the North of the Korean free trade deal. All of it was sacrosanct. Once we got involved in these trade deals, it was like you never could touch them again. They were written in some type of tablet and an oracle that could never be revisited. Well, it's different now. As a new guy in the White House, and he has a fantastic team in place. Wilbur Ross, who's the Commerce Secretary, Bob Lighthizer, who's, of course, the USTR, and Peter Navarro, who does trade policy at the White House. It is a great group, and I'm just delighted my old friend Peter Navarro is with us now. Hey, Peter, how are you?
Hey, Laura. Thanks for the shout-out there. I appreciate it.
No problem.
We are actually doing a great job here, I think. And, you know, we got out of the TPP on day three. We've stripped away some of the regulations and energy. It's going to help us export more. And I don't know if you looked at the calendar, but August 16th, we begin what's going to be a very tough set of NAFTA negotiations with Ambassador Lighthizer in the lead. But we're also, I don't know if you know this, we're also opening up the Korea deal as well.
Yeah, we got into that. We got into that a couple weeks ago, and I think that was really, really cool. That was really smart. I want to advance the ball. Unlike a lot of radio shows, I've been covering all this stuff, as you know, because you've been on the show for many years.
Yeah.
I've been covering this in depth, and I worked for a law firm years ago that did a lot of this work, so I know a lot about it, especially the steel issue. And I'm curious.
We've got the steel and aluminum investigations going on, which will bear fruit at some point.
Yeah, but hold on. Don't do the talking points with me, because I want to get this, okay? Because we've been hearing, including last night in Youngstown, that has gotten hammered by this dumping, hammered by the cheap coal roll steel been coming over from China, hammered. He made a huge deal of this last night in Youngstown. And maybe we'll play a soundbite if I'm lucky. So he makes a huge deal of this in Youngstown. And then you guys tell the Wall Street Journal, well, we're going to keep looking into this. Like, why the heck are we not responding with the types of sanctions and the tough action that we thought Donald Trump would respond with? What's the big delay here? What do we have to learn?
The delay, as it were, is the Department of Commerce must finish its investigation under the 232 statute. And if the secretary comes in with a finding that national security is harmed, then the president can act. So we're waiting for that report. The Secretary of Commerce is doing a measured, detailed job, but that's what you have to do. I mean, you know the problem here. Unless you follow process, you wind up in the Ninth Circuit with some judge kicking the can towards Hawaii, which is crazy. But everything's on track. And meanwhile, there's stuff that's going on below the radar in terms of stepped up enforcement at Commerce on dumping and anti-dumping. Ambassador Lighthizer is already getting out ahead of some things at USTR. We've got a couple of executive orders that the president signed that are helping, for example, Customs and Border Protection really ratchet up its collection of import duties and also policing and monitoring all the crap that comes across our borders in cargo containers that really shouldn't be allowed in. So, I let me make a prediction here, Lori.
Yep.
Laura, the next 6 months, by the end of the next 6 months, by the time we get to exactly a year from inauguration, these next 6 months are going to see just the most amazing actions on trade that have ever been done by a sitting president. And the first 6 months have been a way of setting all of that up. And now, again, we got things like the NAFTA thing going. We got the Korea thing going. We got steel and aluminum investigations going. We've got some other things in the pipeline. It's all good.
Okay, let's also focus on this issue that, and I speak up a little bit if you can, Peter, because you sounded a little low there.
Sure, absolutely.
Another issue which is critical, which I've actually, I can't say this because it's off the record, but on the issue of the market economy status, which China desperately wants.
Yeah.
Again, this is kind of trade geekdom, but let me tell my listeners how important this is. If China gets the market economy status imprimatur, the World Trade Organization, that is a huge deal. Now, that would require the United States to agree that they are abiding by certain norms of conduct and fair trade. Correct, Peter? And where are we on that issue?
Okay, so let's first explain to your listeners why it's a big deal. It's a big deal because when China dumps products, steel, aluminum, whatever, autos into our market, if they are not categorized as a non-market economy, it's very difficult to set the duties at a level high enough to deter their dumping. So that's what's at stake. It is, Laura. It's absolutely huge. Where we are is that over Ambassador Lighthizer's dead body, will this country agree to China getting market economy status? So this is going to be fought in the trenches at USTR. It's very high on the priority list at USTR. And USTR and guys like Stephen Vaughn, who you know well, are doing everything possible to make the case. The problem, of course, is that China does what it always does. It uses what is called its three warfares, the economic warfare, the propaganda, the psychological warfare, to try to push Europe and other places around the globe to support their transition to a market economy status. And so therein lies the tale. But I tell you what, if the WTO gives them market economy status, that will not be tolerated by this country.
Well, Peter, I was just back from Africa this morning. I just got back. And I will tell you, China is everywhere. I had such long conversations.
54 countries.
Oh, no. I have such long conversations with people from Zimbabwe and South Africa. And these are people, a lot of them are politically really liberal. But they said when you get into certain parts of Zimbabwe, the signage is in Chinese. Like, they are everywhere. They are all the money that they've made on this trade imbalance, all the extra cash they have, they're putting in mining, they're putting in rare earth, they're putting in investments in critical construction and infrastructure, commercial real estate. They are going bananas. I've known this, obviously, for years, as have you, but it's amazing to talk to people who actually run businesses there and who will give you, like, just chapter and verse of how China buys off government officials, especially that corrupt Mugabe. It's amazing. I mean, they are, you know, they got a lot of cash. They can throw it around.
Well, it's been frustrating to me because my book called The Coming China Wars, which I wrote in 2006, had a whole chapter on Chinese colonialism. And basically the colonial model in Africa and Latin America and, by the way, Australia is basically give these governments a bunch of money, which either goes to buy infrastructure or into some Swiss bank account for these corrupt dictators. And what China then does is encumber two things. One, all the natural resources in the country, and two, access to the markets. So you take a place like South Africa, Right? South Africa loses all of its indigenous manufacturing production, surrenders its markets to the Chinese, and then all its natural resources go out the door. You flip over to Chile, it's the same way. All the copper goes out. Chile benefits a little bit in the short run from infrastructure, but China takes over. And by the way, Laura, they also buy the farmland.
Oh, no, they took that. Oh, they're doing big agrarian investment as well. Absolutely.
In Africa, when you take away the prime farmland, you're basically starving the people. So, I mean, I think Africa needs a little bit of Africa first here.
No, I learned so much. That's why I love traveling, because you learn so much from the people. Actually on the ground. We're talking to Peter Navarro, in charge of trade policy at the White House, works with Lighthizer and, of course, Wilbur Ross and others. Talk to us a little bit about there are different points of view in the White House, and some folks are more hospitable, let's just put it mildly, to the more populist conservative approach to trade than, let's say, you and Lighthizer and Ross are. How does that play out currently with the new makeup in the White House? You got a new communications director there, Scaramucci, who comes from Wall Street. I like Scaramucci a lot, by the way. But he comes from a different world, not necessarily known as a populist conservative, or certainly on the issue of trade. Is there a tension there, or do you feel like the populist agenda is protected, alive and well?
Well, certainly not with Anthony. I love the guy. There's the brotherhood and the sisterhood of the 14th floor of Trump Tower. The folks that I worked with for months on the campaign, we totally get the Trump agenda. And Anthony was right there as a brother in arms. So, and he is totally on board with things. In terms of the other stuff, my view is what happens in the Roosevelt Room stays in the Roosevelt Room. It's healthy discussion, and the leaks that get out, I tell you, what's discouraging to me is just how false so much of the reporting is, and it's purposely designed to stir up discontent and the appearance of some kind of chaos, when in fact it's just the opposite. We have healthy discussions. And ultimately, the president has a clear vision, and he decides.
Oh, he makes those calls. He's making the calls. Sometimes on Twitter, sometimes in public remarks.
Yeah.
Before we let you go.
Folks, your listeners should go ahead.
Before we let you go, right before I took off for this Africa deal, I remember I was seeing in a sit-down, and this is typical, where Bill Clinton and George W. Bush were – or at one of their forums, and they're backslapping each other, and they basically have the same view on trade. And they were talking about arrogance, and you shouldn't be an arrogant politician. They're both clearly hitting Trump without mentioning his name. And I always joked, it was like Klush 2016. What difference does it make? Clinton Bush, like, same on the issue of trade. But does that surprise you that the Bushes are still so, every chance they get, they seem to want to needle the administration, even if it's implicit and without naming names?
It doesn't surprise me that either one of those gentlemen are attacking Trump, because what Trump does is basically repudiate everything those two presidents did on trade, which wound up basically having a tremendous negative impact on this country. Let's not forget that it was Bill Clinton who basically greased the wheels for China to get into the World Trade Organization in 2001. And since that time, we've lost over 60,000 factories and 5 million manufacturing jobs. And then, number two, George Bush was on the case for 8 years, distracted by Quixote wars in the Middle East when he should have been paying attention to China. And basically, he was the guy who let, along with the Republican Party, who let those jobs go offshore. So, no, I mean, Trump is a change agent here in the best sense of the word. He understands what needs to happen in places like Ohio, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. And what needs to happen is we need to get our manufacturing base. And by the way, I don't know if you noticed, Laura, on Friday we came out, the president signed a great executive order on the defense industrial base to do an assessment. And he is the first president to since Eisenhower, who really understands this intimate connection between economic security,
national security. That's what he talked
the
about.
Defense industrial base.
Yeah, that's what
he... And that's what people like Bush and Clinton miss. I mean, Bush can be as hawkish as he wants.
And I would say we're almost out of time.
Have an economy.
Yeah, Peter, we're out of time. But let me tell you, when Al Franken writes to Wilbur Ross, as he did in April, the U.S. government must stand up for American iron and steel workers. Remember up in Duluth, Minnesota, they had all those big steel and iron during World War II.
Yeah.
Al Franken. I mean, the Democrats who get this issue, they bond with their workers and with their voters. And that's what Donald Trump did. So keep it up. It's great to talk to you again, Peter. It's been too long. Peter Navarro, director of the White House National Trade Council, here on your Healthy Radio Addiction.
The Laura Ingraham Show.